Well, you know I've come from work when I have my big old laptop with me.
Instead of your
tiny
awesome little Air.
Yeah. Huh? So, yeah, I was at work today working on a problem that I spent a week trying to solve this problem, and I finally solved it, and I got it squared away. And I have a demo tomorrow, so I tested it, and it wasn't working. Right here. It wasn't working. And I was like, what the hell is going on? So I'm testing. Everything is exactly the same. It's working exactly as it should, but then it fails. So I take out the part that I did in order to make it work, and it works now. So I don't know what's going on.
So you put in a workaround.
Yes.
And it worked, and then it stopped working, and they took off the workaround, and it didn't...
It works.
It didn't unwork like it did initially.
Yeah.
Fun.
The workaround stopped working, and now the... And it has to do
Your
with...
Your computer healed itself.
No, it has to do with servers in .NET. I want the server to print to a different computer, on the network, but IIS can't do that unless it impersonates a user. So I had to go through this whole process having I had to figure that out, then have it impersonate a user. And it did that. And it finally worked. And then it stopped being able to do that. And I turned off the impersonate user. And now it's able to print. I don't understand.
Is there a sysadmin screwing around on the other part of the backend part?
The only thing I can think of is that that maybe it was just the initial kind of... I don't know. I undo the impersonation, so there's no reason why it should stick around.
And there's no sysadmin changing.
There's no sysadmin changing IIS stuff. If anything, I'm the only one who was really touching IIS stuff. It's on the QA server, so I mean, there's no reason for. It's only going to be on QA because it's only an internal thing anyway. But the weird thing is that. Oh, it's just so... I don't know. I wanted to also write a file system, and I eventually found that using the same code worked.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of playing around with permissions, I just did that because it seemed like it was already doing it anyway. So, I mean, this is not a security thing. It's an internal thing only. So I did that, writing the file, and maybe doing that caused something weird to happen? I don't know.
I can't help either. I haven't done IIS in forever, and hopefully I never have to do it again. I've had those days where you spend days and days working on something you initially thought would take 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those days, that's frustrating. That's when you want to become a farmer.
So how's work life for you? You were not at work. You were camping.
Well, just for the weekend. But yes, I took the kids camping last weekend. It was fun. I've gone camping, well over 100 times with the Boy Scouts and whatnot, but it was never like this.
Boy Scouts, we need to talk about that.
Yes, Boy Scouts. It was never like this because we went to a state campground and we had... an electric site, which is made for a big RV or something like that. It had a 50-amp circuit on it. I could take my kitchen stove and run it in the campsite. That's how much electricity there was,
wow.
But it was like...
They bill you for that? I mean...
It's not that much more than the non-electric campsites. It was in good proximity to the bathrooms and the beach, so it's kind of nice. But anyway, yeah, your neighbors are right on top of you. I mean, the best way I could equate it was like it's like pitching a tent in your backyard, I mean, because you have a gravel pad to park in, and you put your tent or your trailer right next to it, or your trailer's on the gravel pad, and there's people, 20 feet away camping too. And so that was unusual because all times camping, it's been more like there's a parking lot, and you have to walk 50 to 100 to 150 yards to get to where your tent's going to be, mm-hmm. It's not like right there.
So there's a little bit of seclusion for you. You don't have neighbors so much.
I mean, yeah, you might have. If I could imagine where if you're in like a campground that's like, there's different, well, yeah, a lot of times there's campsites where there's like little groves or something. Where,
yeah.
You know, and you typically get the grove to yourself.
So you may be like adjacent to someone, but you're not right up on.
Yeah, so these state campgrounds, I mean, the price was right. There's the beach there. There's a playground at the beach. They had showers. Water was close. So, I mean, there was a lot of convenience things. And actually, Allison made friends with two little girls that were camping at the site next to ours. So that was nice, too. But yeah, it was just, when I first got there, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm camping. There's just people everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was, there's tons and tons of kids, you know, from little kids.
Were there other
teenagers.
Tents, or was it like a bunch of RVs?
There was a few other tents, but vast majority were pop-up trailers to RVs, or to motorhomes. I mean, you know, there was not, most people were not tenting.
Yeah.
There were a lot of teenagers riding their bikes around. I mean, it was just like, it was almost like, if you go to like a cottage town for vacation, right, and there's all those kids, that's kind of like what it was like, but it was a campground.
Almost sounds like a refugee camp.
Lots of kids hanging out, riding bikes around. Mm-hmm. It was just very, it's different at first. I got used to it, but, you know, I think there's good things in doing that kind of camping, and there'll be good things in finding a more primitive campsite.
I think you might want to look into, if you do something like that, maybe renting an RV type situation. So just to see if that maybe improves, like, it gives you a little bit more alone time, gives you a little bit of a cave, as opposed to the tent, which is just fabric. You get some, you know, wood and...
Yeah, I'm cheap. Paddling. I'm not going to get... if I get an RV, it's going to be like a 1970s
rent.
Meth...
I mean, couldn't you rent
like
one?
Well, yeah, but if I do, I'll be renting like the 70s meth cooking RV, not the top of the line, luxury jacuzzi spa RV. And I don't know, you go camping to... hang out outside, not to hang out and watch DirecTV in your RV. Most people don't.
That's the only way I'd go camping.
Boy Scouts.
Yes. So Boy Scouts still hate gay people.
They choose not to allow gay people to play.
And it's...
Or atheists.
Yeah. And it's and so when I first told you the information, you said, well, I'm still gonna have my son do Scouts. And then a couple, like 30 minutes later, you're like, well, now I'm feeling really conflicted about it. So I'd like to hear your thought process behind this.
Well, I read the article, and I mean, the guy makes valid points. You shouldn't patronize that kind of organization. You should withdraw your kids from Scouts. And the article, the thing that really, I don't know if it was the thing that made me conflicted, but the thing that made me most emotional was where he was saying you should withdraw your kids from Scouts and that kind of thing, because, you know, I know all the good that Scouts has done for me, right? And it just I get really emotional thinking that to do what's right, you'd be denying your kid the experiences that I had, you know, and that.
Well, there's an assumption. It may be a true assumption, but it's still a fundamental assumption there that your kid's going to enjoy scouting as much as you do.
Sure, yeah. But let's just go with that one, right? I mean, there may be other options. I mean, our high school had I forget what they call it. It was an outdooring, you know, group that you could go with. But you know, I went on a couple other trips, but just wasn't as scouting as Boy Scouts, you know, it just wasn't the same atmosphere. And I don't know, you know, I'm really gonna have to think about this.
I mean, my point is, and maybe you close that door because the dripping is coming through, if you can. I don't know if there's stuff in the way. My thinking is that by the time Max is old enough to do scouting, this policy will probably change.
I hope so.
It's under scrutiny right now. I think that you're seeing, you know, backlash against this, you know, the Chick-fil-A stuff and all the other things going on, and you're seeing, you know, huge backlash against organizational, you know, rigid
institutional prejudice.
Yeah, good point. Good way to put it. So I hope that by the time Max is of age, this won't be an issue. I mean, he's still two, right?
Yeah. Well, no, he will be two next month.
Okay. Yeah. So you will you will have a point when your kids will be 9 and 11, and that'll be very insensitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I just
that was just a dumb joke. It went right over your head.
It did, yeah.
Your kids will be 9 and 11.
Oh. Hi. Okay. You said 9 and 11, so you could have just like if you just like 9 11, maybe it would have been a bit more of a joke. But anyway, yeah, it disturbs me because I know how it was like a really the best thing best part of my childhood by far, and just thinking that I agree, I don't want to support an institution that is bigoted.
Yeah.
It's bigotry.
I mean, it's outright bigotry. I mean, it's on a level that is, as far as I'm concerned, comparable to, KKK type stuff in terms of the way that they are bigoted towards these people. I mean, because if you look at the KKK, they don't necessarily talk about how they want to kill all the black people. They say they want to separate themselves from the black people. They don't want them to be around. And that's what the Boy Scouts are saying. So, yeah, I mean, if you were a kid, you had a lot of fun in the KKK. But now, society has caught up. What do you say? Do you say, well...
I mean, there's a little bit of difference, right?
There's a significant difference.
It's not like there's any indoctrination of anti-gay.
I don't know whether that's true or not. That may be true in your troop, and it may not be true in other troops.
It could be. There could be much more. I mean, most troops that I'm aware of are sponsored by churches. However, the church didn't play a large role in our troop. There seemed like there was a good separation there. It wasn't, a full separation. I mean, there was, the church had Scout Sunday, and you were, asked to go to, a Methodist Mass, type thing. It was all just good exposure to other things, right? It was no indoctrination or anything like that. And really, that's really as far as the association went. And yeah, there was no indoctrination of, gays are bad. The story had, the whole thing about the gays, I guess, one of the main cases or whatever was a gay den mother, I could understand. See, okay, so if you want to protect children, you don't want to have gay men as assistant scoutmasters. There's a little, tiny argument there. No, listen to me.
Why?
There's a tiny argument. Compared to a lesbian den mother, that's just all, it's immoral. We don't want their influence.
This is the false assumption, again, that gay men are more likely to be pedophiles, which is not true.
No, not more likely. Well, you're right. Okay, you're right. Straight men like little boys too. You're right. All right, I take all that back because you're very true in that. But the argument to say we don't want a girl who only likes girls, teaching our scouts. I guess there's going to be those kind of pedophiles too, but I don't think there's very many lesbian women who'd like to play with little boys.
It doesn't seem like there's a very large. I mean, well, yeah, you mostly hear about teachers, right, who go after young boys, and typically not lesbians. But I mean, would there be? Imagine the scandal if a den mother was banging a scout. And I'm sure it's happened.
Well, see, the mother's only in charge of Cub Scouts, and Cub Scouts is only until, 9. So it could have happened, but, it's just pedophilia. I mean, I guess it's all technically pedophilia until they're over 18. But, if there was...
pedophilia, there's statutory rape, and I think there's slightly different.
Sure. Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, I guess there could be a female assistant scoutmasters, or they can play roles in the troop. So, I mean, it could happen. It probably has happened. From my point of view as a 15-year-old, it'd be awesome.
Of course. when you're that age and you're a boy, I mean, you are thinking about sex whenever you see anything vaguely associated with sex.
Yeah, I don't know about the ongoing, you know, if there was any traumatic experience there, but I think, you know, the kids are generally, this is awesome.
I think it's going into a different topic, I guess, but I think the problem with that is that it is the sort of the sense of you're peaking too early. You know,
it's all downhill.
Yeah, it's all downhill from there. You know, if you're in a situation where you're banging your hot teacher, you are peaking way too early in life.
True that. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything really else to say about the Boy Scouts. It saddens me. What makes me sadder is the thought of me thinking that I should keep my... Assuming Max wants to do it, you keep bringing that up. But keeping Max out of it on principle. I don't know if I could be that principled.
Hmm.
I would look for an alternative, I guess. But if I can't find an alternative, I might cave.
Swallow your pride and jump.
But yeah, when I was reading that, I was almost crying. Like, just the thought and all that stuff and reading how he suggested, I'm like, that's right, I should. I told Greg I'm about to cry thinking about this.
Yeah,
it was that big of a part of my life.
It's not a... It's not a happy thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's much easier to not go to Chick-fil-A, right? Than it is to take away a formative part of your your past experience. It's definitely easier to not go to a crappy fast food restaurant that serves shitty chicken.
You know, a couple guys at work, some of the more religious types, they really liked Chick-fil-A, and I wonder if part of that was, you know, they felt they were fighting the good fight or something like that. I never thought of it till today. I only heard about the Chick-fil-A thing today.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, it kind of like went ding. I'm like, did these two guys go there that often? Is it really that different from us? You know, I like to support an independent restaurant. They want to support a Christian restaurant.
I think it's different because I'm sure they could find a Christian independent restaurant.
Yeah, probably. And you're still supporting a multi-million dollar or maybe even billion dollar organization.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. They probably donate a lot of money to the church. I don't know. But I'm just wondering if that's why they like Chick-fil-A so much all of a sudden. Or maybe they just like bad chicken.
Yeah, I mean, it's still shitty fast food chicken. It's never going to be more than that. So I don't have a problem.
I saw a shirt for you today. I was going to tweet it, but I wasn't sure that it I didn't want to offend any just casual followers or anything like that. In bigger letters, it said, do the math. I'm like, oh, cool. Geek shirt or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, plus Jesus. I guess he had 11 apostles, I think. I think that's what the 11 is.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it's like, do the math, you know, in the ironic, you know.
Didn't he have 13 apostles?
I don't remember. I am the Catholic, and I don't remember how many apostles he had. I'm pretty sure the numbers just went to 11, and it said, do the math, and it said, plus Jesus. And,
okay.
Part of me wanted to walk up to the guy and say, well, when I do the math, there's no answer.
I get 11 to the Jesus power, and that doesn't make sense.
There's no, there's
11,
no
11 plus Jesus, or one to the, or it's a big number, 1 to 3, 4, 5.
Do it on a calculator.
Yeah.
Can you spell Jesus on a calculator? No. Well, it's 7.
You have to do some base, some ridiculous.
Well, I don't know. If you, like, when you turn it upside
if
down,
you, if
right?
If you did base 20,
J, you can...
If you did, like, base 36, you could do it.
If you turn a 7 on a calculator upside down, does that make a J?
No. Makes an L.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So,
boobless. Yeah.
But I like the irony in the shirt because you can't solve the math. Maybe that's what they want you to do. You can't solve the math. But to me, it was like, no answer. The answer is nothing.
I'm going to search for this certain because it sounds interesting.
The answer is nothing. But maybe the answer is you humans can't solve it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Plus Jesus.
Plus Jesus. Let's see what Google has to say.
Or maybe do the math plus Jesus or something like that.
Okay. Do the math plus Jesus.
Now, that plus is just, you might want to put the plus in quotes or something. Because Google's going to make sure Jesus is in every result, but not really look for the plus. I don't know. It was just some shirt that I thought it was funny because if you try to do the math, you get nothing. Maybe Jesus was a variable. Maybe it was Jesus.
On that note, I was reading this blog back and forth between an atheist and a presuppositional apologist. And I don't know if you're familiar with the presuppositional apologist.
Okay.
And
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, really. Well, so the apologists are the people who try to rationally explain Christianity in various ways. Presuppositional apologists go by the idea that God is absolutely necessary for even things being intelligible, therefore God. So, like, you and I, as atheists, make the typical presuppositions that the universe exists, we have senses that are sometimes accurate, and we have ways of communicating with each other that are sometimes accurate. And those are essentially the three presuppositions that we make. And the rest is...
Wait, hold on. I'm thinking about the third one. I'm like, isn't the third one a given? Isn't it, but wouldn't it be ironic if I'm having a conversation with you and you're having a conversation with me, but we're speaking completely different languages, but they all make sense. So I'm talking to you about the presuppositional apologists and you're talking to me about beer right now. And the conversation makes perfect sense to both of us.
Right, yeah. So the assumption is that we're talking about the same thing, we're conversing about the same thing. So if we make those basal assumptions, then what do you build the rest on? And the thing is that the other guy's adding, well, you can't have an intelligible universe without the ground of being of God. So nothing could exist without there being God. And that's just...
Or the basic rules of physics.
there's no good reason that I can see or that he can explain to make that, except for his argument was, if you don't have God, then all you're left with is randomness. And if everything was random, then nothing would happen, because that means that even, like you said, the laws of physics would be random. But that's not... Since you can say the laws of physics, you don't have to necessarily say God, right?
Well, it comes back to...
Including God adds a lot of teleological baggage that doesn't necessarily have to be there.
It comes back to the why or the values, what they are.
Right.
And for us, for us, a satisfying answer is you can't observe that yet. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we've observed these are the values for someone who's more religious.
Values is the way it's normally put, but I think a better way of putting it is these are the fundamental parameters.
Right.
But the fundamental parameter space that fundamental to get into it.
The
fundamental Lagrangian.
Why is the Planck length the Planck length? You know, why is the gravity of an electron, the charge of an electron, the charge of an electron, why is it gravity? Why is the mass, all that stuff, right? Why is the mass of an electron the mass of an electron?
Right.
And to us, a satisfying answer is they are, and we're able to measure that. Why? We can't tell you. Maybe someday we'll have better clues,
yeah.
Where for the Apollo.
I think the better question is how, not so much why. How sure. is it that the electron is this mass and not and constricted and you know constricted to be this mass?
How?
Because no, why in some sense why can imply purpose. And I don't think that's necessarily a given, but it's a somewhat semantic argument.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. In my English, why fits better for me. I understand what you're saying. You don't want it's that whole intelligence, the whole intelligent design. You know, because if you ask the question why, then you go back another step and you're like, because. Something made it that.
Right. It's this anthropomorphizing that we do. We try to.
How is a. See, to me, how does it mean the same thing? How seems like it's.
Well, if I ask the question this way, how are the values. Going to the values word. How are the fundamental properties set in the universe? I think that asks the question perfectly fine without asking a why question.
Okay. Yes. That's a question that I'm comfortable with. It means the same thing. Yeah, and, you know, for me, it's all about observation. You can't test it.
You can't repeat
observe
it.
Yeah, I mean, there's things we can't observe. There's things we can't test. Things that, you know... Especially the things that don't interact with the things we observe.
Yes, that's a huge problem.
You know, so if they don't interact, now there's the whole gravity of dark matter thing, but forget about that. Just imagine some guy in a big white sheet who doesn't interact with anything you can observe. Now people will argue whether if he interacts or not, but find me a test.
There's the thing. If there is interaction, then it should be observable. And that's, you know, just the way it works.
It's observable to the believers, though.
There is some sort of interaction on some level, mm-hmm. it has to be observable, or else it is not interacting.
Right.
And if it's not interacting, then there's no reason to consider it.
Who cares? Yeah. It might be there. It might not be there. But it doesn't change tomorrow's cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that you know, going back, you know, I used to say I was agnostic, and Greg's talked, I don't know, Greg in my own exploration, I think, you know, atheist is probably a more accurate term. But like I said, you know, I can't observe, no one can observe what happened before the Big Bang. So there's a wall there. And if there's a God who set those fundamental rules of the universe on the other side, maybe he's there, maybe he's not. I can accept that kind of God. But I'm not going to believe in him, mm-hmm. right? That's why I used to say agnostic, right?
Sure, that kind of God, if you want to present it as a... I mean, I don't know why you'd even go so far as to present it as a mind so much as simply a...
It's like us being ants in an ant farm, right? Yeah. You really, more or less, they don't observe you outside the ant farm, you know? So, oh, you know, I thought I had a great memory/realization, and I think it might have been the turning point where I turned my back on God.
Ooh.
So, Heather's sister, I might have told you this story again, but they recently had, like, so Heather's sister and her husband had a hard time getting pregnant, so they did in vitro, got pregnant 8 months, you know, a month before delivery, and the baby gets strangled by the umbilical cord.
Mm.
After they tried all this stuff. And really, you know, God works in mysterious ways, whatever. But any God that works in a mysterious way that lets that happen? Not one I care to know.
That's a...
You know, and I mean, really, that was the starting point. It's like, fuck you.
So you did start with a sort of...
At some point, I was indoctrinated, so I never really questioned it.
Yeah.
I was never really religious, but I mean, I got married Catholic, and I was still open to the idea then, somewhat.
So you did, there's the conundrum that goes on that atheists hate God. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, you know, the atheists, at least the atheists that we are, mm-hmm. we don't believe in gods. So there's nothing to hate.
Right.
But so, we probably would hate that God were it to exist.
So I had a conversation with the priest, right when we were getting married. And that whole thing I just explained about the agnostic and the, you know, believing if there's a God, here's where he interacts. And here's what he definitely did not do, you know. You know, I remember having those kinds of thoughts then. So, I mean, you know, in 2001, I was that far along. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to remember exactly where I was. But like I said, it was indoctrination from a young age. So you kind of just were an autopilot. You go to church with your parents, you take communion, you whatnot. Anyway, like I never did have the moment that my friend Steve had. He's a year older than me. And he had to have the conversation with his mom that he wasn't going to church. Like, he was in college, I think, and he came home from college, and he made a stand. He's like, I'm not going to church with you. I don't believe, you know, I don't believe in God anymore. And it was like people crying and screaming and all kinds of stuff. I never did have that with my mom. My dad's just there. He actually got, you know, he was raised Baptist. And I don't know, probably when I was in high school or so, he took the RCIA, it's the classes to become Catholic. And he actually did that. I don't know how much pressure my mom put on him or, you know, what the story was there. But, you know, like when I was a little kid, like before my brother was old enough to go to church, really, when he was just a little kid and would have just, you know, my mom, it was only my mom and me. We'd go Saturday nights to church. My dad would stay home. Maybe he was staying home for the kids. I mean, because I was only 4 years old before my brother was born, so he might have went then, and I just don't remember it. But, I mean, I remember most of my memories of going to church at young ages was just my mom and me. My dad would stay home. Maybe he was watching the kids, and I missed that part of it, you know, being 4 years old.
I had a similar, not the same level, but I did at one point stop going to services, even though it was never a very religious thing. It was more of a cultural thing. I felt very much like it was a combination of two things. It was a combination of three things. The first was me rebelling a little bit. The second was me being just absolutely completely bored whenever I went to those things because it was, I didn't get any of the community thing out of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the third was that I didn't believe in this stuff either. So, you know, it was all those three things. But as you get more, I mean, it doesn't stop there. That's the thing is that, I mean, for you and I, we keep exploring the question and it gets more and more concrete how ludicrous the God fables are, the ones that have metastasized in culture. Mm-hmm. Those are just, you know, they're contradictory, they're completely silly, they're anthropomorphized, personified, illogical weirdness that is completely untestable and has no bearing on reality. When you add that up and you look at the other stuff that may be weird, but it has bearing on reality, and we can test it, and it's much more fascinating to me. I wanted to do to talk about the Higgs. Maybe we'll do this in the post show. But there's this thing about the Higgs that never was really covered by much of the press. That's really important to understand. And it's so weird, and yet it's so awesome to me that it's still, I mean, it's fundamental, and it's this, you know, you're learning about this thing, and I know maybe like 2% of this stuff, and the people who are working on this, the people who are in college, graduate students, etc., they're probably around, they know 50%. So that gives you an idea of the gulf of knowledge. Mm-hmm. People who are actually working on, you know, at the LHC probably have 80 to 87%. People who are working on the specific experiment and the Higgs theory is probably 90 to 92%. Mm-hmm. That's as far as they go. Right. So, you know, me knowing just 2% is still a lot more than the 0.02% or something that most of the public knows. But just that 2% is just fucking fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful knowledge, and it's also the exploration of it and the knowledge that, you know, this could be wrong and it still can be corrected, and there are things that could go in different ways, and there are, you know, there's probably some adjustment needs to be made to general relativity. There's definitely some adjustment needs to be made to standard model. I want to know. I want to keep learning, and I want to mm-hmm. keep, and I don't want to just sit there and say this is dogma.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe that's just something the way we're wired, right? It's okay not to know everything, and it's exciting to, it's exciting to hear what humans are able to figure out
mm-hmm.
using this thing called science.
Not only that, but it's exciting to see the results of science. These computers we have right here are very much the result of our understanding of quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing in any religious text that gives you anywhere close to the information needed to do any of this stuff.
They stop short of that. God made you so capable building that.
Mm-hmm. Took your time. Took a lot of time.
Only 3,000 years?
No. Humans have been on the planet for...
No, they have not.
Humans have been on the planet for 100,000 years at the, you know, the smallest bit, maybe 250,000 years. And...
You are wrong. It's 6,000 years. The planet's only been around for 6,000 years.
And you have to then believe that that God was sitting up there fine with this. Fine with everything, people killing each other, you know, not growing, people dying from their teeth, dying from things that are easily, you know, dying from infections.
Well, he wanted to make sure that that we had a good, strong genome and a good, strong population before we got all fat and lazy from playing on computers.
Well, see, that's the thing, is that we don't have a big, good, strong genome because there was a bottleneck at one point. And in fact, humans are not very genetically diverse compared to other populations of animals. So that doesn't fly. Sorry. So then 2,000 years ago, God finally said, okay, that's enough. I'm going to send my son, me version, not to China where they have writing, not to, you know, other areas, but to this backwards little area of, you know, at the time, fertile area. Now it's a desert, but it was pretty fertile. It's Fertile mm-hmm. Crescent. Of backwards donkey fucking goat herders. And there I'm gonna send my message. And it won't really do much besides kill a lot of people until 1,800 years later. But they will get computers about 2,000 years later. So it'll work out.
That's nice.
That's what you have to believe.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be sound dismissive there. I'm like, it was funny. I don't know what to say about it. I enjoyed it. Let's drink some
beer. All right.